Richie Neal, first, before we begin any further, Richie Neal, first, Massachusetts 1st District, I see that Martin McGuinness has passed, and you counted him as a friend. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I think that he was extraordinary to the extent that he helped to place the bullet outside of the mainstream of Irish politics. And he, as is often the case, you sometimes need the hardest people to make the peace. And I think that we often speak, for example, of changes that took place in the world, and it generally means that those who were in power or those who desired power were prepared to make certain concessions, not only to gain power, but also to convince their most ardent supporters that perhaps shifting course was important. And I think in the case of Martin McGuinness, he helped convince the Army Council of the Irish Republican Army that they could no longer bomb their way to a united Ireland, and instead they had to enter into the crucible of politics as a path forward. And I think that's what he did. And I also think that it was clear, and he acknowledged in subsequent years, that he had been the commander of the Derry IRA. And at the same time, he ended up by entering into negotiations which led to the run-up of the Good Friday Agreement, which is one of the most enduring achievements of American foreign policy, certainly during the many years that I've served in Congress, and some might argue during the last 20 years, the most significant accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. On another subject, Donald Trump has tweeted and now moved to ban transgender people from serving in the military. What do you make of that one?
I think it's a mistake, and I think that transgendered people have served in the military since the beginning of time. And I also think that the debate that we had in the 90s about gays serving in the military, they had served in the military since the beginning of time. And again, I just want to call attention to this. This is a very complicated issue, and it cannot be done by tweeting out a determination where it's clear that your own members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff have not come to a conclusion similar to yours. And in fact, the president's top military advisor said until they get a direct order, they're not going to change policy. And I think that that's an alarming tone that this administration continues to undertake, and that is they create their own sense of chaos. And here, I think that transgendered people should be allowed to serve in the American military.
Richie Neal, the Russia investigation keeps on giving over and over and over again. Now we're hearing that Vladimir Putin, you know, expelled a whole bunch of American diplomats and people who are Russian nationals from working in our embassy, that his efforts to get Donald Trump elected have boomeranged on him. What do you think?
Well, I'm not so sure that they've boomeranged on him. I think that it's Congress that's forcing his hand. I mean, the overwhelming verdict of the House and the Senate has been to include the idea of isolating Russia economically. And the sanctions, I think, have met the detailed response that you might have anticipated. But here's an important consideration that is oftentimes underreported. California has a bigger economy than Russia does.
Right.
So this is certainly bound to further harm the Russian economy. If it were not for their natural resources, including oil and gas, they would not be much of an economic player in that part of the world at all. So I think that the House of Representatives, in overwhelming numbers, I think there were only three dissenters in the entire House and only two in the Senate, that's a pretty forceful verdict from the legislative branch of government. And if anything, I think that if the president were having second thoughts, he knows that if he were to veto this legislation, it will be comfortably overridden.
Is it your sense, though, that the Russian thing may unfold to the detriment of Donald Trump in terms of what the special prosecutor may find?
Yeah, I do think that there's a real problem here for him. And I think that, you know, you have now seven intelligence agencies that have all come to the same conclusion, contrary to the position that the president has drawn, and that is that there was a concerted effort that was linked to the highest echelons of the Russian government, including Vladimir Putin himself, a former KGB agent, who contrived for the purpose of distorting the outcome of the American election. And they are now, even as we're looking at that conclusion, examining what they're about to do in Germany, where everybody sees that the same thing is about to happen. And I look back at these conclusions, and it seems as though everybody but the president has come to the same conclusion. And it is, yes, they tried to interfere in the American election.
Richie Neal, it's unfortunate, but we've had a death in North Adams, in Berkshire County, where we live, I live. And there is a question of who should take the place in the State House of Representatives in that seat. And a lot of candidates have emerged. This is where political difficulty for a major political leader like yourself comes in. Will you endorse anybody?
I haven't had anybody contact me yet. I don't anticipate that I would intervene in a Democratic primary if the circumstances continue. But remember that special elections are always peculiar. And that is because turnout tends to be very low, and it means that you have to just get your supporters to the polls. And I use the opportunity again to applaud the great service of Gail Caridi. She was really wonderful to work with for a long period of time. But I think the nature of a special election is very hard to predict.
Richie, you know as much about taxes as possible. They say next up is tax reform. What can we expect?
Well, I'm hoping that it'll be bipartisan. I think there's broad agreement on what's wrong with the tax system. There's less agreement on how to fix it. And I hope that we're not going to end up with a tax cut and call it tax reform. I mean, we have not touched the tax code since 1986. I think that it's riddled with exclusions and preferences and deductions that ought to be revisited, understanding that the last time the tax code was upended was before the Internet had been invented. So the changes that have been vast across the globe, I think, ought to be emulated here in the United States. And I think that a tax code that improves the quality of life for all members of the American family ought to be the starting point.
And what would your number one priority be in such a revision?
Well, I'm going back and forth on two things right now. Middle-class tax relief. And I think that the way to do that is perhaps asking people at the very top to pay more on the individual side. And at the same time, I'm also of a mind that we need to use the tax code, I think, right now to reinvest in community colleges, apprenticeships, and skills training. Clearly, that's where the middle class could immediately benefit. And I think that those ought to be issues that we can all agree on. To be very frank, I don't think people at the very top need tax relief. And I do think that we can take a look at the corporate tax code in America. President Obama said that the 35% rate was too high. He suggested going to 28. The Republicans suggested going to 25, but at 25, you had to give an awful lot of deductions, preferences, and exclusions in the code. The result was that a lot of people who were for tax reform were no longer for it when they found out how the payments would be allocated. And I think that one of the sticking points we're going to have, this is going to sound a little bit technical, but Kevin Brady, who's the chairman of our committee, he has indicated that he desires tax reform that is revenue neutral. That means that the same number of dollars would just be moved around within the current system, but he will not adhere to what is known as distributional neutrality. And that means that they're headed toward giving tax relief to people at the very top, similar to what happened during the Bush years. Even though during the Bush years they said it was a middle-class tax cut, there was no evidence to support it. Now, the White House is also offering what they say will be a specific plan by mid to late September, in which their suggestion is that it does not have to be paid for. Republicans in the House say it has to be paid for. But I can tell you this, I intend to be a player in this discussion and intend to make sure that the Democrats are included fully in the conversation.
Do they have to do that?
I think that they will have to do it if they find that the Freedom Caucus, which is suggested to be great adherents of fiscal discipline, if they're to do this where it's going to drive up the cost of the deficits, I think the Democrats can be full players here to the extent that we can bring them back to a mainstream discussion of offering tax relief to middle-class Americans.
Richie Neal, thank you so much for being with us. Richie is, of course, the Massachusetts 1st District. His name's really Richard, but we call him Richie. Everybody does. You ever hear somebody calling him Richard, you know they don't know him.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks so much.
All the best.